Welcome to the National MS Society Sharing Your Diagnosis with Friends and Family. Your host, Kendall Hugel, will now begin.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Kendall Hugel, and I'm the Coordinator of Client Assistance from the Greater Illinois Chapter of the National MS Society. On behalf of the Society, I would like to welcome you to tonight's program titled Sharing Your Diagnosis with Friends and Family. This program is brought to you through a collaboration of the National MS Society's Midwest Region Chapters. Together, we provide programs, services, and research to improve the lives of people infected by MS. Recordings of this call will be available through each chapter for anyone wishing to refresh their notes or share with a friend. Our speaker provided a handout for tonight's call. If you did not receive the handout in advance, please don't hesitate to contact your local chapter office to receive a copy. We would also like to mention there is a wealth of opportunity made available by the Society through your local chapter for all levels of participation. We encourage you to reach out to your local chapter by calling 1-800-344-4867 or by visiting their website for a list of upcoming events and programs. Tonight's program is supported by an educational grant from Genzyme. Please note that during the first part of the program, during our speaker's presentation, you will be in listen mode. Feel free to jot your comments and questions down as you listen. Following the presentation, the operator will open the lines for anyone to ask their questions. We ask all participants with questions to limit their time to one question per request so that as many participants as possible may enjoy a direct response from our speaker. And tonight we are fortunate to have as our speaker Tammy Lott. Tammy is a licensed clinical professional counselor at One Counseling and Wellness located in Washington, Illinois, which is just outside Peoria. Tammy has an MA in Rehabilitation Counseling from NIU and a Bachelor's in Speech and Hearing Science from the University of Illinois at Urbana. In her 15 years of experience, she has worked in several settings, including community agency, hospital, both inpatient and outpatient, and private practice. And during her 14 years in the hospital setting, she worked with medical patients with multiple traumas, illness, new and chronic, multiple sclerosis, traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury, and stroke. And now I'd like to welcome Tammy to begin this evening's program.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for calling in tonight. Again, my name is Tammy Lott. As Kendall said, I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor, and most of my experience has been with the medical population. As Kendall said, I worked in a medical center in Peoria for about 14 years, with mainly on the rehabilitation and neurocritical care units, working with brain injury, spinal cord injury, stroke, and multiple sclerosis. As my career moved on, I became more interested and more passionate about the MS population, and my caseload continued to grow as far as MS patients. I was fortunate enough to work both on the inpatient and the outpatient side. How someone is coping inpatient right after a new diagnosis or, right in the middle of an exacerbation versus how they're coping 2-3 months later down the road as an outpatient is very different, is often very different. So it's been very helpful to me to help my patients to see that whole full circle so I can help people at the different stages. Right now I'm primarily doing outpatient work, and again, a lot of my caseload is with the multiple sclerosis population. So I feel I have a pretty good understanding of this disease on a professional level. On a personal level, my father had MS, so I understand the effects that has on individuals and families also. So tonight, I want to talk, again, this is about, sharing your diagnosis with friends and family. It's kind of broken down into three larger categories. The first is talking with friends and family about your MS. The second is how to respond to people that don't understand your disease. And the third will be empowering you to create your own support network. So going back up to the first one, I'll start with that, with talking with friends and family about your MS. I think, that first and foremost, there's no right or wrong way to do it. There's no perfect time to tell people. How you do it, when you do it, and who you tell is your story to tell. I think that's really important. I think some people feel some pressure as to how soon they tell everybody and how many details they give. There's no right or wrong answer. It's your story to tell. I think that's really important. some of the questions to think about before telling someone about your MS. You know, a lot of questions will be going through your mind. One of the first questions I encourage people to ask, you know, if there's someone in particular that you're thinking of telling, talking to about your diagnosis, especially if it's new, why are you telling them? And if you think about, you know, possible the advantages and disadvantages of letting this person know, because I think people are often caught off guard that it can be pretty difficult for you also as a patient to start sharing all this information. So, you know, sometimes it helps to make almost a pros and cons list of who you're going to tell, how much detail you're going to give each of those people. Not that it has to be written in stone, but I think it is good to kind of think about it ahead of time. Along those lines, the whole issue of talking to kids about MS can be kind of overwhelming for some people. I think some main points of that, first of all, I feel it's very important that kids know, and they know pretty early. They know very early. They don't need a lot of details if they're not ready to hear. And in fact, most kids will ask what they're ready to hear. If they ask you the question, they're ready to hear it. But I've seen in my practice, especially on the inpatient side, with nothing but the best intentions, but sometimes families, parents are trying to shield their kids and not scare them, not concern them too much. And so they either don't tell them or they don't give them enough information. And kids are always smarter than we think they are. And very often the kid will pick up on it. You're not telling me everything. You're not telling me something. And that just sets off anxiety. It also, with kids, kind of sets up a feeling of mistrust, of not trusting people. So certainly with MS and with all the other conditions that I've worked with in the hospital, I really strongly encourage people to let the kids know, let them in. They don't need a lot of details if they're not ready to handle yet, but to be honest, as much as you can early on. I forgot to mention when I started, when I speak, I give a lot of examples and case studies. I just think that helps illustrate points and paint the picture I'm trying to explain. I had a woman with MS that I've been following for quite a while, and she has young kids. And at one point, her MS was pretty progressive, and she was concerned about her sons. One of them, she was really concerned about. The other, she was not real concerned about. Felt like he was doing okay, but I asked if I could meet with each of them individually, which I did. And the second child that she was not too concerned about came into my office, and he was just the cutest, sweetest little thing, and very friendly and polite. And he sat down on the couch, and we did small talk, and we talked about sports and what he likes and his friends. And as soon as I said, "How do you feel about your mom's MS?" he just burst into tears. And I'm a mom, so I had to, that took a second for me to kind of pull it back together myself. And I did. I gave him a hug and said, "It's going to be okay." But I had to put my counselor hat back on and talk to him. Details of MS, what I thought he could handle. And he responded very, very well. I think, especially hearing it from professionals, a lot of times really means a lot to kids. After we talked for a second about it, I told him, I said, "It's going to be okay." And that really, that simple statement really got his attention. And I think a lot of kids, I think this is true for most of us, too, if we think back. One of the biggest things our kids want from us, from parents, from adults in their lives, professionals, is to let them know it's going to be okay, that, we're going to take care of them, everything is going to be okay. I wanted to zero in on him with what exactly he was afraid of, what exactly he was worried about, what exactly was making him sad. And for this particular kid, it wasn't so much the physical side, it was the emotional, that she was very upset and crying all the time. He said that she seemed like she was always mad at him. And to him, it was almost irrelevant that she had, was in a wheelchair. To him, it was the emotional stuff that was really upsetting to him. So that's important to know for the family, for people treating the patient. And I assured him, and this is a very honest answer. I said, well, we can work on that. We can get that better. On that side of it, we can absolutely work on and get better. And he just seemed to find so much comfort in that. So I think with kids, it's important to try to get them to verbalize exactly what they're scared of, exactly what they're worried about, exactly what makes them sad. Now, sometimes kids have a hard time verbalizing that. You know, even smart kids may not be emotionally as mature as they are with their intelligence. And sometimes you have to do things like drawing pictures or get creative, but, try to get some concrete answers from them as to what they're feeling and what they need to feel better. Next, I want to talk a little bit about talking to employers and colleagues. Sometimes this can be complicated depending on your employer, depending on what type of work you do. I used to do a lot of vocational counseling. I don't really do much of that anymore. But I know that, with the ADA, in a nutshell, as long as your disability doesn't interfere with any major functions of the job, you don't have to disclose your injury or your disability. That being said, I usually encourage people to just go ahead and be honest and put it out there. In the end, that seems to work better, to just to be forthcoming. On the other side of that is, if you do have a job where your MS is going to interfere with the daily functions of your job, that is something they need to know. And it really does depend on where you work. If you're an MS patient and you have double vision issues, and you're a semi-truck driver, that's an issue that needs to be figured out. If you're a receptionist or something like that, it's not obviously a safety issue. But then again, I always come back to, I just think it's usually better to kind of put it out there. If you're looking for a new job, applying for a different position, and they don't know about your MSS yet, that can be kind of sticky also. I had a patient recently who was applying for a new position, a new job in a new city, and he was a little nervous about disclosing the MS to the potential employers. So he came up with this idea, which I love. I thought it was great. He ended up doing a PowerPoint presentation. It was kind of a pre-formal interview process they had there. So the PowerPoint really fit in with how they were running the interview. But he did a PowerPoint presentation, and the very first slide said something to the line, you probably noticed I have a disability. Up until he arrived, they didn't know anything about it. But because of his gait and his mobility, it's obvious, and you need him, that something's off. But he didn't talk about it, and, that was the first thing on his slide. The next thing he said was, my MS absolutely does not interfere with my ability to work. He made it a point to note that he now walks without a cane, when before he had walked with a cane, which I thought was an excellent point to make, that not only have I managed to live with this disease, but I'm getting better. So I think that was a really good thing to put in there. And then that was about it. And then he just went on the rest of his presentation about his work history, his experience, his strengths, his positives. And I thought that was a great way to address it, because it's there. It's important. It's something that needs to be said, but it's only a part of who he was. So I thought that was a good way to handle it. Bear with me here. If the whole issue of work, of changing jobs, of not being able to do the job that you're presently doing, comes up a lot. Based on my experience with patients, I always want to see people work as long as they possibly can. Even if it's difficult, even if it's challenging, and I understand that people with MS, the things, the basic things that they did before now are often much more difficult. But from an emotional, psychological standpoint, it just seems to be extremely beneficial to keep people working as long as they can. Sometimes that means adjusting the job description a bit. Sometimes it means some modifications on the job, accommodations. But psychologically, it's just really good to keep working as long as possible if you're already working when you're diagnosed. Okay, next I want to talk a little bit about just the idea of need-to-know basis. Sometimes, you know, I've had patients who they tell a very, very small number of people about their MS for various reasons. And then I've had patients who, you know, tell everyone that they encounter. And there really is no right or wrong with that either. Again, it's your story to tell. But I had a man that I was seeing, a patient, and his wife was becoming concerned, and, you know, she said, it's all he talks about. And he was a little upset and offended by that, but we talked about it for a while. And I think it's important to talk about, because that certainly wasn't his intent. But one thing that I see a lot, not just with MS, but with some of the other populations I work with too, is people sometimes get stuck in patient mode. And it can, you know, it can consume you. People can become consumed by their diagnosis. And especially if you've just been diagnosed or if you've just had an exacerbation, it's difficult because your life is kind of put on hold and everything has to shift. You know, if you're in the hospital and you're getting, you know, some pretty intense treatments and you're getting therapies and there's med changes and, you know, either coming up, starting up a treatment plan if you're newly diagnosed, or adjusting your treatment plan. You know, you can be inpatient going through this for a while, and then outpatient, same thing. A lot of this is coming together. There's a lot of doctor's appointments, a lot of treatment. There might be infusions. There's therapies. And MS it's a big deal. It affects, you know, every part of how you function. So I completely understand how and why this happens, but I get concerned when I start to see someone getting stuck in that idea of I'm a patient, I'm sick, because emotionally it really takes a toll on people. And so when I see that happening, I like to gently step in and kind of let them know what I'm seeing. And I usually talk about that with people when I very first meet them, that's something I watch for. And then if I see it happening, I'm gonna kind of step in and bring it to your attention. Because I'll tell people, you are more than just a person with MS. Everything about you that was there before is still there. And I want, you know, to keep the focus on keeping you intact, all the other things, not just the MS and the medications and the pain and all the struggles. So for some people, it's easier to look at it as just kind of a need-to-know basis. And maybe there's some people in their life that know a little bit, and then there's a handful of people that know everything. Because it can be exhausting telling everyone all the details over and over and over. Along those lines, sometimes it helps to have kind of a scripted response in your head as to what you say. I always tell people to try to prepare yourself emotionally for these conversations, only because I've heard time and time again when people say, all right, I thought I was doing all right, and then, this guy asked me about it, we hadn't talked about it yet, and then I got upset and I got tearful. And it kind of catches people off guard, and, you know, sometimes it can be emotionally difficult on both sides. So a lot of times what helps if people have kind of like a little index card in your head, that you have kind of standard things that if someone asks you a question that you say, especially if they're people that are kind of on the fringe of your life that aren't, you know, in your inner circle, to have some standard responses that you tend to say to people, so you don't have to overthink it. It's just there, you say it, and you move on. And for a lot of my patients, that's been really helpful, just to kind of store that away in their head. Talking to friends and family sometimes can be difficult, because for a lot of people, they tell me it just makes them feel very vulnerable. that they're having a hard time asking for help, that they're having a hard time, you know, shifting roles. And, you know, I can completely understand that vulnerability. And, you know, I always remind people that, you know, MS is too big to do on your own. You need some help to figure out how to do this, to how to cope with it, to get your treatment plan moving. And then, you know, once you get that stabilized and you're doing better and you're feeling stronger, then you won't feel quite so vulnerable. And then you can get back to helping the other people in your life. So, you know, I tell if you're having, you're newly diagnosed, you're having a rough time with your MS, and you're feeling vulnerable, that's okay. That's okay. And the people around you will help you get through it, and hopefully you'll get to the other side of it where you're stable again and you can help someone else who needs your help. One patient I worked with, she was hilarious. One of the things that was interesting about her is that she definitely did not get stuck in patient mode ever. She was very frustrated with it. She didn't want help. She didn't want to talk about it. She didn't, she just felt like she would even use the word embarrassed. And we worked on that a lot because certainly there's nothing to be embarrassed about. But once she got better with that piece of it, she said, I just hate this. She called it the sad nod. Like if she's seen people that she hadn't seen in a while, said they would rub my arm and they would kind of tilt their head to the side and say, how are you doing? And she said, I hate when they do that because it's just, it makes me feel uncomfortable. It's kind of depressing. And it bothered her so much to the point that she kind of withdrew and isolated herself because she didn't want to see that sad nod. She didn't want to talk about it. That was not okay either. So we had to really work on that, you know, because her world was becoming smaller and smaller and smaller because she was avoiding those conversations and people's reactions. And you can't control how other people are going to react, of course. So we had to work on that. But, you know, I think if you're uncomfortable with those conversations, it can cause people to kind of isolate themselves. So I think preparing yourself ahead of time can kind of prevent that from happening. Okay, I want to talk a little bit. I have one more example here about talking. I'm moving on to the second here, to the next section on how to respond to people that don't understand your disease. Okay, one of the most difficult things I think about MS is it's such a spectrum, really, and the inconsistency of it all. I have patients that I work with that are pretty impaired and really require a lot of help and are really struggling. You know, and I have people on the other end of it who are functioning very well and, you know, for the most part, you wouldn't even know they had MS. So there's such a spectrum and the inconsistency, even with one person. I mean, you all know that one day you may be able to do task A and the next day you cannot. So that inconsistency is hard for the person with MS to deal with, and it's hard for people around them to understand, especially if they don't have a good understanding of MS. Example, I have a patient there was a lot of tension building up with her and her family. I feel that a lot of that her family really did not have a good understanding of MS. It was really completely new to them. And for a lot of people, it is. They had never known anyone with it before. They really hadn't talked about it, heard about it, read about it, you know, too much at all. And this person, my patient, was pretty high functioning. So it wasn't really recognizable. And it was inconsistent. And because she could do something one day and she couldn't do it the next, her family was getting frustrated with her and would even start to doubt her. Now, this doesn't usually happen, but it was, you know, they would even subtly suggest that she was attention-seeking. So obviously that's painful and frustrating. So that is certainly a situation where the family just needs some more understanding and some information about MS. So for that, I made it a point to talk with the family at length about this, and that made a big difference with my patient and her family, so everybody was on the same page. If you need help explaining everything, don't hesitate to recruit someone, recruit your neurologist, recruit a counselor or seek a counselor to help with this, or even just collecting resources. I know I'm happy to do it. I know the, you know, social worker I work with a lot with MS patients, the neurologist. If you need help explaining this to your family, to your friends, to a colleague, a boss, whatever, you know, the professionals in your circle are more than happy to help. So don't hesitate to do that. It's also good to do some looking and have some of your favorite resources on hand to suggest people take a look at, whether it's friends, family, or work people. You know, always, always lots of good information from the National MS Society. I know here in Peoria, our MS Center at INI always has a lot of good materials and information. And again, your own neurologist, counselor, if you have one, you know, to have those actual resources, you know, handouts, links to web pages, to have those on hand to kind of give to people as needed. I think it's also good to have a few key words in your head to help people really understand. Like I said above, the inconsistency of MS, I think it's important for people to understand that that's valid. That's kind of part of the disease. For people to understand and expect that that's going to be there, I think it's important for people to understand that MS is often invisible, which can make coping very difficult because, you know, if you're not able to work or take care of your family like you would like to one day, on a specific day, it's not something that people can always see. If you are, unless you're using a cane, if you're in a wheelchair, it's more visible. But often the highly functioning people really struggle because, you know, fatigue, short-term memory problems, those things aren't visible. So having some of those key words on hand, you know, that it's inconsistent, that it's sometimes invisible, you can't see it, I think is important to relay to people. Another issue that comes up with that is that whole kind of the worst case scenario. I think often when people hear about MS, when they're diagnosed and someone they know diagnosed, often their mind goes to worst case scenario. And sometimes that's all people know is that worst case scenario. So I think it's important, I know for me as a counselor, when I meet with especially someone who's newly diagnosed, to make very clear that that doesn't have to happen. Because sometimes that's what they have in their head, and that's kind of what they're planning. They're kind of buckling in for the worst-case scenario. And I think it's important for people to know that doesn't always happen, and it doesn't usually happen. So same thing from the patient to friends and family, making sure that they understand that there's a spectrum here. It doesn't have to go to that end. My patients with the – it's very different coping – problems for the people who are really, really struggling and kind of, you know, pretty disabled by MS versus the people who are pretty high functioning and it's not visible. They're very different coping issues. A lot of times, you know, with the lower functioning, it's all, you know, obviously that you're so disabled and need so much help and having to redefine so much of your life. For the higher functioning people, a lot of time it's that tension with friends and family because they don't. I hear this a lot. They don't get it. They are, you know, they think I'm attention seeking. They think if I would just do this, I'd be better. If I just do this. And that can be very upsetting for an individual and within a family unit. So getting a feel for where people are coping wise can really help the patient and the whole family. Again, with how to respond to people who don't understand the whole idea of scripted information is okay here too, you know, to have kind of a little index card in your head of some of the typical things that you'll say to people if you can, it's becoming clear that they don't understand this disease or they're misunderstanding it, to make sure they understand about the inconsistency, that it's sometimes invisible, doesn't have to be a worst case scenario. I think it's also important to let people know that there's a lot of good research going on with MS, and it's very promising. You know, there's every reason to be really hopeful in the MS world. And even the treatment that we have now is so much better than it was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I think it's good to let people know those positive things, too, and to hear yourself say it is always good. Okay, I want to talk move on now a little bit to be empowered to create your own support network. This first bullet I talk about a lot. The MS does not define you, who you are, what you believe in, your favorite music, your favorite movie ever, your favorite color, your favorite season. None of that has changed. And I think, you know, that kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier, is why I don't want people to get stuck in patient mode. And again, I have to be careful with this because, you know, MS is big, and I never minimize how big it is. But we want to keep this, we want to keep you intact and, you know, we keep reminding you of all these things that you love, all these things that you like, all these things that you can do are still there. You are more than a person with MS. So I really encourage people to keep up all the activities and interests that they enjoy as much as possible. Now, sometimes physically, you're not able to do them, or sometimes you just need to adjust them a little bit. But I really want people to keep up activities. You know, if you think about kids, when if there is some sort of tragedy or trauma in their life, what do we want them to do? As soon as possible, we want to get them back to normal. We want their normal routine. We want that familiarity. We want them to get back to what is familiar. It's good for kids. It's good for adults, too. We're the same. So I really want people to remember what they like, remember who they are, and continue with that as soon as they're able to. I always tell people a great source of support is simply the familiar. You know, the things that you know and love. As soon as you can get back to it as much as you can, I really want people to do that. Another great way to expand your support network is a support group. If your community has a support group, they can be wonderful. Of course, I haven't visited every MS support group in the area. I visited a couple, and they've been wonderful. You know, I've been involved in or seen lots of different support groups for other diagnoses, for other diseases, and it really depends on the group. It depends on the facilitator. Sometimes those groups are a lifeline. They're wonderful. They're positive. Sometimes the support group can be kind of negative and kind of a complaint session. So when I encourage people to always go try and find a support group, but if you go and you feel worse than when you walked in, then you probably shouldn't go back. But for the most part, support groups are great. Another one is individual counseling. I think with MS, it's best to find a counselor that has at least some experience with MS. It's a complicated beast, and I think it's important to have someone that has some background with MS and neurological issues to best help you navigate that. You know, and I, with all my people, all my patients, I tell them, you know, the goal is never to have someone in therapy forever. That should never be a goal of a counselor or psychologist, and it's not. But with some of these diseases like MS, I know that there's going to be periods of time where I'll see people a lot, and then they'll go away for a while, and then they'll come back later. And that's okay with MS because it, you know, it changes or things come up in life, and you need to kind of reassess. A counselor is a great person to, you know, outside objective opinion. A lot of times people will tell me they've kind of shut down because they feel that they're a burden on their family and friends. They feel like they're depressing, that they don't want to dump all this on their family, you know, and almost always the family is there for them. But a lot of times the patient just really has a hard time opening up to them just because they feel bad. So a counselor is an outside objective opinion, a person that can listen, give you some ideas, be a sounding board, and be a great support. Along those lines, counseling is great for family too. If I have a patient, I can see that person, only that person. I can see them occasionally with their family. I can see them all together, whatever they want. But again, yeah, I think it's important for family to really understand this disease and what's going on. One thing I talk to people a lot about is to make the conscious decision to live in the present, in the right now, to take joy and give joy each day, that it's precious time. You know, I've seen people in the hospital who are really kind of waiting to be happy. You know, I'll be happy when I can walk. I'll be happy when my vision's better. I'll be happy when this, you know, and I always talk to them about it. In the meantime, that's precious time wasted. And I want, you know, even if you're feeling bad, you're not functioning well, to make sure that every day you do something that is good, something that makes you feel happy, something that makes you feel joy every single day. So I think that's a good focus and actually a way to make yourself feel supportive. That was the main part of my presentation. I was going to open it up to questions now.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Again, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. And our first question is going to come from Kristen.
Hi. Yes. How do you tell a seven-year-old what MS is?
How do you tell a seven-year-old what MS is? You know, part of it's going to depend on the seven-year-old. They're all a little bit different. But for a seven-year-old, I think a good place to start is to tell them that mommy or daddy or whoever, you know, the person is having some trouble, and use some very concrete terms like with their muscles or the messages from the brain to their muscles, and that the doctors are going to help her get better with some therapy and some medication and try to get her better.
Our next question is going to come from Pam.
Okay, can I pause for just a second?
Yes.
Okay. There is an issue here in this room with my room here. Can you hold for just a second?
Yes.
Okay. I will be just 1 second. I need to talk to me real quick. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Our next question comes from Pam. Pam, please go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
You had mentioned that to communicate to someone just outside of your circle, to have a little script, like a postcard size.
Well, uh-huh.
How would that script read?
To be honest, it's different for every person. A lot of times people will just, you know, they might even use like a standard description from some of the resources they have, you know, that, well, I was just diagnosed with MS and I'm having trouble, you know, it's causing me to have some trouble with my walking, with my vision, with my memory, whatever trouble you're having, you know, some specific things you're having trouble with. Then they may, you know, have some bullet points about I'm getting help with my, through therapy, I'm taking PT and OT, and just list the, maybe even the medications that they're on. And, you know, just kind of some bullet points about some concrete things that they're working on.
Thank you. And our next question is going to come from Mary Ann.
Okay.
Mary,
hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering, is there something that I can do where when somebody's pushing my buttons, trying to say enough is enough, when they know that it's making my nerves just shake and whatnot?
Yeah.
I don't know how to come across to somebody to say, look, this is a disease of my nervous system. I can't handle this.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times if you're not able to have that conversation with someone, it's helpful to have someone else have that conversation with them to say MS is very sensitive to stress. It doesn't like it. It makes the symptoms get worse. And so for right now, I need to kind of be relaxed and not deal with these kind of questions. And if you're not able to do that, to have someone in your trusted circle do that.
And there are no more further questions in queue at this time. And we do have a question from Mr. Samuel. Mr. Samuel, please go ahead.
Yes. We've tried helping my father-in-law. He's in the nursing home to understand about the MS. and we tell him that how the heat is bad and how to rotate him by making his muscles weaker. But every time we go and visit him, he has his room too warm. He has a hard time moving around. So I'm not sure what to do about that. Do you have any helpful suggestions?
I'm sorry, but you cut out that at the end. Could you repeat that?
My father-in-law has the trouble moving around because he keeps his room too warm, and it debilitates him more. Do you have any suggestions on what to do to help him to understand that the heat's not good for him, or any ideas on what else we can do to help him to stay warm but not too warm?
Okay. Is it his choice or the facility's choice to keep the room too warm?
His. He has control of the temperature in his own room.
Okay. Have you tried to have that conversation with him with details, or?
I have. I've told him how it affects his body and how it makes it harder for him to move. And
okay.
That it's better for him to have it just a little bit cooler. But
okay.
Then he just, I don't understand why he keeps it hot.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I think that's, does he seem to does he have a good understanding? Cognitively, does he seem to be with it, or is he pretty impaired?
He has some issues with his cognition.
Okay.
As far as like memory and stuff. But,
okay.
His wife lives with him in the same room to make it a little bit easier for him. And today I went there and he had the room cranked up to 77.
Oh, goodness.
And
okay.
How tired he was and couldn't do anything.
Okay. Well, if he, I guess I would say two things. First of all, if he seems to have a good understanding and he seems to be oriented and is able to follow what you're saying, then I would let him know that the heat is actually going to make him feel worse, and the doctor's orders are actually to keep it at a certain level. A lot of times I go back and I kind of make the neurologist, for lack of a better word, be the bad guy, you know, say that the doctor's order says it has to be at this number, and even keeping a very specific number, you know, if it's, I don't know, 69 or 70 or, you know, whatever it needs to be at, to have a concrete number and to say it's doctor's orders. And if it's something that he's just not getting or he keeps increasing it, sometimes you just kind of do what's best for their health and turn it down. And if he turns it back up, turn it back down.
Kind of where we're at now.
What's that?
That's kind of where we're at now. We turn it back down, and then next time we go to visit, is turn it back up.
Is it, how often does he do that? Like, is it something you're going back and forth throughout the day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whenever anybody leaves him, he turns it back up so that it's comfortable for him.
Okay. You might want to try, I've done, you know, with different situations, is done more of the, you know, the doctor's orders. And even, you know, I've even had a neurologist, not specifically for temperature control, but write a script for things that the patient was not understanding, that was not in their best interest. So sometimes, you know, if it comes from a doctor and it's doctor's orders and there's a specific number, sometimes that helps sink into their brains.
And our next question is going to come from Janet. Janet, please go ahead.
Yes, my question is, I've had MS for like 15 years, and I'm gradually getting a little bit worse. Do I share any of that with my kids who are in their mid-20s, or do I just assume that they can see it? Do I need to, or should I say anything?
Yeah, I know it's hard. In my opinion, it's always better to tell them, to give them information. You know, like I was talking about with little kids, with, you know, adults are really the same. First of all, if we're not given information, our minds are kind of fill in the gaps and kind of make it up as we go along. And we often come up with something worse than what is. So, you know, it's almost always better to just to put it out there. You know, people want to know, and kids, what's going on with their parents. One, so they can, you know, maybe they can help if there's things they need to know for themselves. It may explain some behaviors or relationship issues that didn't make sense to them. So it can be helpful.
And our next question is going to come from Rachel. Rachel, please go ahead.
Hi. You talked a little bit about career and talking with employers. My question has to do with, I just completed a graduate degree, and a few months later I got diagnosed with MS.
Okay.
And now I feel like I'm in a weird place where I'm trying to think, well, what do I want? And my job is such that I might be taking on more responsibility in the next couple months. Do you have any, and I'm not sure if I want it, and it's causing me a lot of anxiety. Do you have any advice for decision-making at this point in my life?
Are you, well, I'm not sure if you're concerned about physical, you being able to do that physically or mentally, or both?
And it would be a lot of time.
And a lot of time. Okay.
Yeah.
How long ago were you diagnosed?
A month and a half ago.
Okay.
But I've been
so
experiencing symptoms since August. So.
Okay. Well, this is what I would say then. You know, you're newly diagnosed and pretty newly diagnosed, and likely they're just starting to kind of pull your treatment plan together, get a good feel for where you are and get you doing better, feeling better. A lot of people that I've worked with, you know, in, where you are in the timeline, they feel kind of overwhelmed. They feel like everything is not possible if you thought it was before. They're kind of feeling like, I can't. But once their treatment plan gets more stabilized and they're stabilized and doing better, they start to kind of get their bearings again and kind of jump back into what they were doing. I mean, you know, with MS, you have to balance the activity and rest. You have to take care of yourself. You have to have good sleep. You have to manage your stress. But it's also very good to keep yourself cognitively and physically active and challenged. And I think, you know, I would encourage you to move forward with your plans as you have before. And of course, I don't know all the details of exactly what that is, but in a general sense, I usually encourage my people to get themselves and to get themselves stable to keep moving forward with the same goals they had. And if you need to adjust it a little bit down the road, then you adjust it. But you may find that you don't need to.
Our next question is going to come from Virginia. Virginia, please go ahead.
I'm calling to respond to the gentleman whose father or whoever it was so cold and kept his room too warm. I am the same way, and my daughter comes in and she throws everything open and I freeze to death, but my hands, if you feel his hands and see if they are cold all the time, I don't think that's the MS. I think that's something else. And you actually are cold, and you feel cold because I have to keep covered over half the time.
Yeah, and you're right that there are other conditions that can make you feel cold, that can, you know, whether you just feel chilly yourself or, you know, the cold hands and feet. And that's a good point. And for everyone to, not just with this issue, with lots of issues with MS, to remember that not everything is because of your MS, you know. So you're right. I mean, sometimes there are people that there may be something else going on. Maybe it's completely separate. And I think that is hard for a lot of people to differentiate sometimes. And they get in the habit of attributing everything to MS, which I understand because it does affect so many different systems. But sometimes there could be something else going on. So if there's something like your hands are always, you know, literally freezing, you know, and maybe with this gentleman's father, same thing, to look into that, as there might be another possibility. But you know, as far as the temperature, you know, heat and MS don't do well together typically. So sometimes recruiting the doctor to step in with some doctor's or old-fashioned doctor's orders can help break the tension anyway.
And there are no more further questions. Well, we do have one more question.
Okay.
We have a question from Phyllis. Phyllis, please go ahead.
Yes. I'm calling from Michigan, Inkster suburb of Detroit.
Okay.
And in regards to the caller that just, you know, and the fellow with his father-in-law being cold and this person, her mother is always, I am the same way, and I've been this way over 30-some years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was diagnosed in 1992, but my hands and feet are always cold. And I can tell you this, I was, my first support group that I joined about 18 years ago, everybody was cold. And it
uh-huh.
was amazing how, didn't nobody really talk about it, but a newly diagnosed person came in, and she was all wrapped up in her coat, and she came and sat down, and she said, I have a question. I'm always cold. And everybody in the room say, join the crowd. So it's a symptom, I believe, of MS.
Yeah, it very well could be. You know, for across the board, for a lot of people, it could be a symptom of MS. For some people, it may be something separate going on. And it's quite a pickle it causes when you're feeling like you're freezing, but heat is not good for MS. So what do you do about it? That's a complicated, that's a complicated question. That's a tough one. And that's, you know, when those kind of issues come up, that's why I usually suggest, you know, let's get the doctor's opinion on this and see what he says, because that's a tough one.
And our next question is going to come from Peggy. Peggy, please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Since we're all addressing this hot and cold issue, I would like to share the fact that I, too, can get cold. But what I have found is that if you get one of those little hand pedal things that you can either do with your feet or with your hands, if you do that for a few minutes a day, it actually gets your blood moving so that you're warm inside instead of depending on the outside for heat. And you don't want to overdo it, but it works, you know. And then when I start cooling down again, I'll just do it again for a little while, or I'll do it the next day. And it helps to keep your temperature a little more stable, but you have to put out a little more effort to do that. I do maybe 5 minutes forwards and then 5 minutes backwards a day or every other day, and I find that my temperature stays stable. Maybe that would help somebody.
There you go. That's a great idea.
And we have time for one more question.
And actually, there are no more questions in the queue at this time.
All right.
Okay.
Well, this concludes our program. Thank you, everyone on the line, for joining us tonight. And I also want to thank Tammy for presenting the topic, sharing your diagnosis with friends and family this evening.
Thank you so much.
And are we going to go ahead and do the polling?
Yes.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, can you please remain on the line for the polling questions? And our first polling question is going to be, I've learned something new that I will use in my everyday life. Press 1 for yes and 2 for no. Okay, and this concludes this polling question. Give me one moment while I prepare the next question. And our next question is, the content was presented clearly and in an unbiased way. Press 1 for yes and 2 for no. And this now concludes this question. Please hold while I prepare the next question. And our final question is, the speaker was knowledgeable about the topic. Press 1 for yes and 2 for no. And this now concludes our polling. Is there anything else?
No, that is it. Thank you for everyone for joining.
Thank you so much.